Thanks to everyone for coming out this Sunday afternoon. Thanks to those who download these as podcasts from iTunes. We invite your feedback and correspond with us. Give us your comments and suggestions. My email is at utahchristians@gmail.com. We also like to thank those that have taken the membership class, which is available online at our website, www.utahchristians.org. We'd like to thank those who become members. We couldn't do what we do without your help and support. Everything is inspired by the teachings of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, the founder, Acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Today we'd like to talk to you about choosing your battles. Not every battle is worth fighting. A lot of the things that happen to us during the day are just simply distractions to keep us from our destiny. We have a lot of opportunities during the course of an average day to get upset. Maybe it's taking too long at the checkout counter. Traffic might be slowed down or backed up. You've got a plane to catch in a half an hour's time. Maybe a competitor is putting out ill words about you. A coworker is spreading rumors about you at work. A spouse says something to you that they really shouldn't have said. But you need to ask yourself, if I engage in this battle, if I invest my time and my energy trying to straighten someone out, arguing, defending myself, trying to prove that I'm right, even if I win the battle, what's going to be the reward? What's going to be the prize? What's going to be the profit? If that person who cuts me off in traffic, I get back at him, I go tit for tat, I speed ahead, I cut him off in traffic, ruin my whole morning because of that agitation, how is that going to benefit me? 5 minutes ago, I never knew that person. 5 minutes from now, I'll never see that person again in my whole life. But what's the point, what's the profit in accepting that kind of a challenge? There's no profit. The reason why a lot of people are missing out on the best that Krishna has for them is that they're distracted into fighting battles that don't matter. Trying to prove themselves to people, trying to win over all their critics, playing up to someone. These are all distractions. We need to choose our battles wisely. We're not supposed to go around in a fight mode all the time. Do you know anyone who's always in an uproar? Wherever they go, every day, they're upset at their spouse. They're going to straighten someone out at the office. They're trying to prove their point. I'm going to show them just how wrong they are. It may consume them for days, or weeks, months, or even take up years or whole seasons of their lives. But if we make the mistake of engaging in every battle that comes along, then we're not going to have the energy to fight the battles that really matter. We are supposed to be warriors, but warriors choose their battles carefully. They don't just fight any battle. They fight only those battles which are between them and their God-given destiny. Arjuna wanted to make sure before he engaged in the battle at Kurukshetra that he was going to get an eternal benefit from it. There was no doubt that if he won the battle, his life would be comfortable, it would be more convenient, he would enjoy a higher standard of living, he would wield more power. All those benefits would come to him if he won the battle. But that wasn't his main consideration. His main consideration wasn't whether winning the battle would make his life more comfortable. His main consideration was fighting the battle, would that develop his character? In other words, he asked Krishna over and over and over and over again, is it right? Is it a righteous cause? Is it a battle that actually matters? Because he didn't want to waste his time and his valuable energy in exerting himself for something that was temporary or something that wasn't going to give him an imperishable, long-lasting, eternal profit. So we also have to ask ourselves, is the battle that I'm engaged in going to yield any sort of rewards? And if there is a reward, is it a temporary reward or is it a permanent reward? The permanent is obviously much better than the temporary. Maybe someone in the office doesn't want to be your friend. Someone doesn't want to accept you. Someone's rude to you. Someone cut you off in traffic. It's not worth starting World War III over. Are you just fighting to pay someone back or to prove to someone that you really are important? Most of those are just distractions. They're not furthering me towards my God-given destiny. Better not to engage in that battle. Better to pass it up. In the big picture, these things don't even matter. When we get too much caught up and too much snagged in the petty battles, we are going to miss the great ones that Krishna puts into our path. Hanuman, when he was young and immature and untested, had superhuman powers. But he did not wield those powers responsibly. For instance, one time he thought the sun was an orange and he flew towards the sun with the intention of plucking it from the sky. So wherever he went, because of his immaturity, he was creating havoc here and there. So the demigods got together and they agreed to shroud his intelligence in forgetfulness, that he became unaware of the extent of his powers, so that he wouldn't dissipate or waste his energy prematurely, but that when his powers were needed in the service of Ram to junk 800 miles across the ocean, to find Sita being captive in Lanka, and to help Ram besiege and conquer Lanka, then his powers, he recollected his powers, and he had them fully intact in order to do what he was brought to the earth to do. This is a principle. Don't use your strength unless it's necessary. Don't waste your energy in battles that don't matter. If we review the ancient history of India thousands and thousands of years ago, we'll see this principle in effect. In the ancient world, throughout tens of thousands of years of history, there were only two really big wars. That was the war between Rama and Ravana for Lanka, and the war between the Pandavas and the Kauravas at Kurukshetra. Other than that, there were no major conflicts because there were not any reasons sufficient enough to cause them. But now, we're in Kali Yuga, it's the world, it's the age of quarrel and hypocrisy. People are willing to fight at the drop of a hat. They're touchy, they're too easily offended. Instead of letting it go, people fall into the trap of fighting battles that don't really matter. About 20 years ago, a devotee who used to come often, every Sunday from Salt Lake City, who was into more bhajan than kirtan, he spent, it's interesting, this is up here, he spent a few dollars of his money to print out the Gaura Aarti and to laminate it. And he wanted us to chant the Gaura Aarti on Sunday evenings. It's a beautiful song. Kiba jaya jaya gora chande aroti ke soba. But we made a judgment call that having the Gaura Aarti as part of the Sunday evening program would probably be a little bit too much for first-time comers. It would be just a little bit more than they could probably absorb in their first time to the temple. We wanted to keep it simple, and so we made an executive decision that we weren't going to use this on Sunday evenings, but we were going to chant Hare Krishna. That person got so offended that he stopped coming to the temple and hasn't been back for 20 years. And if you ask him about Charu and the temple today, he says, I have issues. I have issues with the temple. But because he hasn't been back to the temple in 20 years, and because he's been out of the touch of the temple, he doesn't realize that although we haven't used it on Sunday, we use it almost every single night of the week. He would actually be delighted to know that this has been used so much, it's torn and tattered. This has been used for 20 years. But he doesn't know that because he cut himself off from the temple. And still, if you ask him today, he has issues. So don't make big things out of small things. Don't be so touchy and don't magnify things. We blow things out of proportion. Some of us think everybody is out to get me. Everybody is against me. Don't flatter yourself. Most people don't know you. And even if they knew you, they're not all out to get you. Duryodhana had this kind of paranoid personality when he went to visit the Pandavas' new assembly hall, which had been built for them in Kandava Prast. The wizard Maya Dhanava had built this at the request of Krishna. And it was a magical building. So much so that certain parts of the building that looked like solid ground were really water. Other parts that looked like water were really solid ground. So Duryodhana, the big muscular, egotistical warrior, he went to a place that looked like it was water. And he hitched up his dhoti and he started tiptoeing through the area. But it was actually solid ground. So the girls, the ladies up in the balcony started tittering and laughing at him. Then he went to an area that looked like solid ground and he fell down and got all wet and soaking. And then the women laughed even harder. So he got so offended, he took it so personally. It wasn't that anyone was out to get him. It wasn't a conspiracy to make him look ridiculous. They liked him. They respected him. But it was just funny, that's all. And yet he could not get past that. He said, I'm going to show them that I'm a person of importance, that I'm not a person to be trifled with. I'm going to teach them a lesson. And because of that insult that he imagined, it wasn't even a real insult, the whole world was inflamed in a war. Women became widows because their husbands were killed in the battlefield. Children became orphans. All because of Duryodhana taking this personally that everybody's against him. He literally started a world war just to show he was important and to get back his enemy. Funny thing is, they weren't his enemies. They were his friends and they were his well-wishers. He completely surrendered to the spirit of the age, Kali Yuga, the age of quarrel and hypocrisy. He completely allowed himself to be a puppet in the hands of Kali Yuga. Not only was there no profit, but there became a world war just because of his lack of common sense. In Salt Lake City about 6 months ago, a devotee shortchanged another devotee of $10. The devotee thought that he was owed the $10, and the other devotee thought that he wasn't owed the $10. So they still talk about it. They still come to me to mediate about the $10. And I say, look, I'll give you $10 if you'll just drop it, put it behind you, and forget about it. And then they say, well, it's not the $10, it's the principle. Hey, I have a higher principle. This is not a battle worth fighting for either one of you. Life is too short and our time is too valuable to fight over $10. Or even if someone cheats you out of $1 million, it's still not worth it trying to pay them back. Keep in peace, pass the test. Krishna will fight your battles and he'll restore to you in due course of time much more than you lost. Let me ask you, are you still fighting battles that have no real rewards, taking your time, your energy, and keeping you from pursuing what's really important, your God-given dreams, your God-given goals? Choose your battles wisely. We only have so much energy, so let's avoid getting caught up in being upset, paying people back, being agitated, feeling wrong. Because then when the real challenge comes along, which is meant to push us into our divine destiny, we won't have the focus to fight or to win that battle. Prabhupada made a short poem about the monkeys who were unable to jump the 800 miles to Sri Lanka. Of course, Hanuman was fit because he kept his focus. He hadn't dissipated his energy. But the other monkeys had not quite envisioned themselves so much as a part of the divine mission of the Lord. And they'd let themselves go a little bit over the years. So some of the monkeys said, I can jump 100 miles. And other monkeys said, I can jump 200 miles. And some said, I can jump 400 miles. But nobody but Hanuman could jump 800 miles. So all those monkeys being disappointed and unable to do the needful at the crucial moment, Prabhupada made a short poem about them. Big, big monkey, big, big belly, ceylon jumping, melancholy. Some things are just distractions. Some things, they don't matter. The other night, I was playing the harmonium during the evening arti, and there was some guests present. And it was real low. It was real basic. And I'm thinking, what's wrong with the harmonium? And my singing wasn't sounding good at all. So I looked down, and there's a notch there. It's a scale changer harmonium. And there's a notch there where it's supposed to be, where most people could sing. And somebody named Vaibhavi, had been practicing earlier in the day and moved it way over into the bass section. So I looked down, I said, oh, no wonder. But I'm not so expert that I can sing and change it. So I'm debating, should I stop the RT altogether while I change it? And it was just sounding so bad, I said, okay, I made the call, I stopped the RT, everything died down, I changed it and put it to where the notch is. But because I was a little agitated, I didn't do it quite as delicately as I should have done it. So some of the keys snagged on each other. And when I resumed singing, it sounded even worse than it had in the beginning. So some or other, red-faced and embarrassed, I got through the RT. And I started to turn to Vaibhavi and say, Vaibhavi, why didn't you put it back the way you found it? And then I thought, I've been married to Vaibhavi 40 years, and she almost never puts things back the way she finds them. She never turns the light out when she leaves the room. If she needs a pair of glasses or some scotch tape or a pen or a pair of scissors, she comes into my office when I'm not there. She takes it, she uses it for what she needs it for, and it never comes back on its own to my office. So I'm looking, where are my glasses? They were there a minute ago. Where's the scissors? Where's the pen? And I'm thinking, this is not a battle worth fighting. She hasn't changed in 40 years. She's not going to change now. Let me take that same energy and hope that I will change. That I will not blow things out of proportion, see things out of perspective, and realize this is a minor fault, that let me not get into it with my life's companion who has so many virtues, who is so dedicated to me. Let me just wish that I become a better person, that I don't get upset about all these small different things. So ask yourself, I've shared, I've confessed, so now ask yourself how many battles you're engaged in that don't have any rewards, how many arguments you're instigating, how much tension you're bringing into the home that could easily be avoided with some minor adjustments. And you may be right. You may be absolutely right. You may win the battles, but you become so battle-scarred, so jaded, and so worn down. You've said things that you shouldn't have. You're consumed with regret. You're mad at yourself. You won the battle, but you're sleeping in the garage with the dog. You won the battle, but nobody in the family is talking to you. When I was in school, we learned about this Carthaginian general named Pyrrhus. He was from Carthage. And he took a navy, he took an army, he landed in northern Italy, and he attacked the greatest empire that the world has ever known, the Roman Empire. And he was a brilliant general, a brilliant strategist, a brilliant tactician, and Rome sent army after army after army, and he just chewed him up. He never, ever lost a battle. But the difference between him and Rome was that Rome had inexhaustible resources. They'd lose one army, they'd just send another army. They'd lose supplies, they had unlimited supplies. Whereas Pyrrhus, every soldier that he lost in the battles that he won, he could not replace. He could not replace the supplies. So he won every single battle, but he lost the war. With the soldiers that he had left and the supplies, he simply had to get back on the boat and go back to Carthage. So how many of our victories are Pyrrhic victories? How many times did we win the argument, but upon retrospection, we would have been much better off to have been the bigger person, to have let it go for the sake of peace in the family? I've heard that a bulldog can whip a skunk any day of the week. But you'll never see a bulldog going after a skunk because the bulldog is smart enough to first ask him the question, I could whip that skunk, but do I want all that stink on me? Is it worth it, you see? So better let someone else be right than to disturb the peace of the home. I've learned it's easy to start a fight, but it's not easy to stop it. It's easy to start an argument, to get offended, and say things we know we shouldn't, but it's hard to take those back. It's much better never to have even started the argument in the first place. It is said that avoiding a fight is a sign of honor. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu spread the chanting, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. He went all over the length of India chanting in public. And many people derided him, they made fun of him, and they mocked him. And he didn't get in there and try to straighten them out. He didn't try to prove to them that he really was on a divine mission, that the chanting of Hare Krishna really, really does work. He just went on being the best apostle and the best example that he could. And his thinking was, the more they criticize, the more I'll be honored. The more I'll be promoted. My critics are my friends. My critics are my benefactor. The more they say, the more God will honor me and the more God will promote me. So I'm thanking my critics. If you want to enjoy your life, be a peacemaker. Be the kind of person who will avoid an unnecessary fight, a fight that's not going to produce any good rewards. Your home needs to be a place of peace. Your home needs to be in harmony. You are stronger together than you are apart. You and your wife, together. You and your family, your children, together. And over and above that, your children need to see a good example. They are going to treat their family the way that they see you treating each other. Don't make a big deal out of small things. Remember the reasons why you fell in love with that other person. I've heard that most of the time when someone leaves their spouse for someone other, they're leaving someone that has 80% of what they need in order to get up, hook up with someone that has 20% of what they need. But if you do the math, they just lost 60%. Nobody has 100%. Nobody's perfect. Everybody has shortcomings. But the grass always looks greener on the other side. Here's a secret. Even the grass on the other side of the fence needs mowing. It still needs maintenance. So you're much better off being content where you are. In America, 41% of first marriages fail. 66% of second marriages fail. 71% of third marriages fail. So you need to ask yourself, are those battles really battles worth fighting? Better to stay where I am in peace. If we're going to live in victory, we need to accept the fact that not everybody will like or everybody will approve of us no matter what we do for them. Have you heard of the 25% rule? Anybody heard of that? Yeah, the 25% rule says that 25% of the people that you meet will not like you no matter what you do. The next 25% of the people that you meet, they may not like you initially, but they could come to like you. The next 25% of the people that you meet, they may like you initially, but they could be persuaded not to like you. And the last 25% of the people, they will celebrate you, they will stand by you, they will support you no matter what you do. Now, when you realize that there's 25% of the people out there that we can never please, and then you stop trying to please those who are unpleasable, it makes life a lot easier. It takes the pressure off. It's a relief, you see, that you don't have to waste your time with 25% of the people. The Pandavas tried everything they could to show Duryodhana that they were his friends and they were his well-wishers. But no matter what they did, he would not have it. He was iron-hearted. And there are people like that. You can loan them money. You can visit them in the hospital. You can send them cards. You can help them in moving. You can give them the keys to a new Lexus. And they would say, I'd rather have a Cadillac. So let's not waste our time pleasing people who are unpleasable. It's not anything to do with us that they don't like us. It's their own insecurity in the first place. It's not our fault. I remember in Melbourne, Australia, in about 1974, the city council of Melbourne decided that they were going to get the Hare Krishnas off the street. So they started applying some old laws from the turn of the century. And we were getting citations every time we went out to chant. We were getting taken to jail every time we sold a book. I remember I personally at one point had 67 citations against me and more than 1,000 citations altogether. And we got used to the Sydney jail. The men were usually put in one wing and the women were put in another wing. So the men would chant, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And then from around the corner and down the hall, the women would respond. And so the whole jail would resound with the chanting of the holy names. And when we would come in, you know, in the paddy wagon, which was almost on a daily basis there for a couple of months, the guards and the prisoners were all so happy. Oh, the Haris are here, you know. They're going to relieve the doom and gloom and the atmosphere here in the jail. So it was a big party that we had day after day. And of course, eventually, the city council had to drop all the charges. But Prabhupada visited Australia right in the middle of that. And he was on a national TV show. And the interviewer said, Swamiji, it looks like the city council of Melbourne is going to make it impossible for you to chant and distribute your books in this city. What are you going to do about it? Prabhupada said, it's not a battle we want to fight. It's not worth fighting for. If they don't want us here, we'll go somewhere else. No big deal. And I had written Prabhupada a letter. I was a temple president. So I wrote Prabhupada a letter. I said, should we hire lawyers to defend ourselves? And Prabhupada wrote back, he said, absolutely not. Our business is not fighting legal battles. Our business is chanting Hare Krishna, and you can chant in the temple, you can chant in the street, and you can chant in jail. So it's not a battle that we want to fight. If they don't want us, we'll just go somewhere else. Here's the key. Don't waste your time and energy trying to please others, to play up to others, to try to win their approval, to conform to how they would like you to be. You don't need their approval to be who Krishna made you to be. Those are just distractions. If you'll let that go and not get involved in battles that don't matter, then Krishna will send people into your life who not only approve you, but celebrate you, your talents, your personality, and your accomplishments. You can relax and be who Krishna made you to be. That's the kind of people that Krishna wants to bring you. People who are for you, who will celebrate who you are. The 25% who won't like you are insecure. They have to push you down to make themselves look better. This is the law of minimization and equalization. They minimize your talents, your ability, your goals, and your accomplishments so that they won't look quite so small and so insignificant. They will keep dragging you down. They'll keep distracting you if you let them. But if you distance yourself from those people and stop being molded by them, Krishna will bring a higher class of people into your life that will add value and not take it away. Now, the best way to answer your critics is not to get in there and trade words with them. The best way to answer your critics is to let them see the results of a life well lived. When I read this poem by Emily Dickinson, I thought of Duryodhana. She said, "Success is counted sweetest by those who ne'er succeed. To comprehend a nectar requires sorest need. Not one of all the purple host who took the flag today can tell the definition so clear of victory as he defeated, dying, upon whose forbidden ear the distant strains of triumph burst agonized and clear." So how did Duryodhana reap the fruits of fighting battles that didn't matter, fighting battles that shouldn't have been fought? He lay in the dust with his hip broken, surrounded by jackals, and he heard the distant sounds of triumph from the camp of the Pandavas who had defeated him and his friends and his cousins and his army. And gnashing his teeth in envy at the triumph of the good, the righteous, and the true, he breathed his last. That is the best way to answer your critics, is to live a righteous life, to do the right thing. The comedian Bill Cosby was once asked if he knew the secret to success. He said, "I don't know the secret to success, but I know the formula for failure. And that is to try to please everybody. Just be the best that you can be, run your race, and Krishna will take care of your critics." When Krishna puts a dream in your heart, there will always be critics who try to lure you into strife, to talk you out of it, to distract you. Look at it this way. They must be pretty impressed with you in order to try to drag you down. But you, on your side, have to be disciplined enough to recognize a battle not worth fighting. God is our vindicator, and He's going to bless us not in spite of our critics, but because of what they are saying. What they mean for your harm, Krishna is going to use to promote you. You don't have time to come down because you have an assignment, you have a mission, you have a God-given destiny. If you would just get a little more focused, you would see the major battles that Krishna wants and will empower you to fight. You will see how the Lord is sending your way greater connections, greater opportunities, greater promotions. Remember, we don't have to get involved in battles to prove to people who we are, or to win over our critics, or to get people to like us. Those are all distractions. Focus on the main goals that Krishna has put into our hearts. If we'll be disciplined to fight the battles that do matter, then we'll see Krishna do amazing things. Like Hanuman, we'll jump over oceans. Like the Pandavas, we'll come into kingdoms. Like Arjuna, we'll live lives of victory. That means that we'll accomplish our goals, we'll overcome every obstacle, and we'll see every dream that Krishna put into our heart, it will come to pass. Thank you very much, and if you're inclined to chant with me, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.